Hey everyone, it's Mary Lou Tyler. I finally have a colleague friend of mine on the show today. With me today is Max Traylor. He is by far the best top of funnel person that I've had the opportunity to work with, strategize with. Oh, let's see what else have we done together. A little bit of here and there, but he is very, very out of the box thinking on all things what I call agency and inbound. I kind of lump those together, which I know is not correct, and he'll correct me on that. But yeah, we've been kind of ebbing and flowing here for the last few years on various accounts, and he has written a book called The Agency Survival Guide. So I've asked Max to come on the show today to talk about the book and also give us some tips with the COVID. But right now, I think we're in month three of COVID as this podcast is airing, maybe month four now. And we're in civil unrest in the United States. So that gives you an idea of where we're at here going forward. But we are still holding our podcast and moving on. And I really liked some of the listeners who I know are interested in top of funnel to listen to what Max has to say about all things attracting people to the way that we want them to come and engage with us so that we can get them further in the pipeline to close one. Without further ado, Max, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me and thank you for the kind words. I've never heard you say that. Nor have I considered myself a top of the funnel person, but you know what? I guess you're right. I'll take it.
Yeah, you are.
I'll tell you what, I don't have a problem with the top of the funnel. I don't, it's not a problem for me anymore. And working with you was a big part of that.
So tell us about what was the impetus around the book? I mean, here we are. I don't think last time we spoke, there was a book in your head, or maybe it was always there and I didn't know.
I have invested four times previous to this time with the book, and four times I have failed to write a book. Oh. But a while ago, I promised my grandfather, who's 95 now, that I'd write a book because he was always telling me to write things down, and I'd always come to his house after work at the agency and talk about the new ideas. And basically, every time I was there, he said, "Well, you have to write this down. You have to write a book."
Right.
And so finally, I promised him. And he's an old guy. I don't know how long he's going to be around, but I made it. We did it. We made the deadline and we got it out there. But I guess it started when, you know, as a kid, I would walk into my dad's office because he would always work from home. Mm-hmm. And I'd ask him, where do you make the money? And he realized that I thought that he was printing money in his office. I thought he was manufacturing the dollar bills. He said, "Max, you can't print money. That's illegal. I have a digital scalable residual business model." Ooh. And I was five, so I had no idea what that meant. And then he would look at me and he'd just say, "It just means you do something once and you make money forever."
Right.
And I said, "Oh, that's interesting. Can we go to Disney World now?"
Right.
But that became my lullaby. And it became the way, I guess the number one thing that he taught me was that if you put your personal life first, mm-hmm. you will make certain decisions about your business that are out of the box and benefits your personal life. And to him, it meant that he didn't have any products on a shelf so he could leave whenever he wanted. He needed to have systems so that his business was scalable. And when he sold something, he wanted it to pay him forever. And so that's what he built.
Great mantra. I do love residual is a word we don't use very often. We use scalable, we use repeatable, but residual sounds very lofty.
It is lofty. It has lofty results. The result was I got to see my dad all the time and we went to Disney World a lot.
Yeah.
And I never forgot about that. Anyway, so long story short, early in my career, I wanted to run a marketing agency. I was into marketing. Professional services model was about the opposite of digital scalable residual. It was a grind. Mm-hmm. And it ground me up. But accidentally, we productized one of our strategies. We took a content strategy that we were delivering as a service, and we started to do group workshops around that intellectual property. We began to license it to other agencies all around the world. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, I started to get residual passive income from these licensing fees of people that I had taught how to use my system on the other side of the planet. And they would wake me up in the middle of the night with an email from PayPal saying, "Here's $2,000. See you later."
Wow.
And so I realized after a year or so of this happening that I didn't want to run a marketing agency. What I wanted to do is find people that had these systems, had these methodologies, but were working in the grind yourself to death business model of professional services, not knowing about these digital scalable residual options like group workshops, online courses, licensing programs, just ways that you could impact multiple people, more people with the same or less effort. And that's what the book is about. It's how to productize consulting services and do other things better too. It's a collection of my story and learnings and 12 interviews from some of the most influential people I've interviewed on my show. And was that a good answer to your question?
That's a great answer. And I love the idea of productizing services. I think a lot of us think, even in my business, that each client is unique. And therefore, you can start with the baseline of frameworks, of methods, of systems, but it always morphs into a one-off type of situation. And, you know, I've learned over the years, I've been consulting now for 33 years, and I've learned that you can start with a baseline in very many of these accounts and projects. And there are some nuances to it where you are perhaps divvying off the framework. But everything in my world, my entire system is numbered. As you remember,
I'll never forget it. You are productized. You have done it. You have a periodic table of elements. Like, it's there. There's a customizability. If that's even a word. I was always very impressed by the work that you've done. So you know exactly what I'm talking about.
I do. And I think it's because I'm trained as a programmer that we were taught early on. And I have some colleagues I've worked with for a very long time now who laugh because they know if you do something more than once, chances are it can be programmed because that's how I was raised. So why always look for how can I systematize something? And you may not have the entire piece of the puzzle, but you'll have enough of it so that it's 85% there as a system, a method, a framework. And then if you want to use consulting services or coaching services or advisory services, that is the additional 15%.
Yeah.
But you can set it up so that it's a do-it-yourself. And I have three programs. I have a do-it-yourself, do-it-with-you, and I used to have a do-it-for-you before I went to the other side of life, and now I'm working on a 3-year project with a company in Denmark. So I'm no longer consulting, but if I were to have a do it for you model, then we would basically take and outsource and do the work internally and then provide the results. So it'd be more of an at-risk type of engagement. And you and I both love the at-risk side of life. That I remember about you.
Well, things have gotten more risky in the immediate past. And we've made some changes in how we work. But I mean, to your point, I do get that pushback a lot from people saying, "No, we don't want to productize. You know, our clients expect custom strategies, and everything we do is custom." And, you know, the way it was explained best to me is, well, you know, what if Apple did that? What if Apple said, you know what, every time we make an iPhone, we're going to talk to Mary Lou and we're going to figure out exactly what it should be made out of and what shape it should be and all these things. No. The hardware, the systems in the iPhone are consistent, but it is tailored to the individual. That's the app store. That's all the apps that are put on it. Those are your settings. Mm-hmm. So there's always an element of consistency, of predictability, of guarantee. And then there's the application of that system to the individual, which makes it customized, which makes it valuable. You need both.
You do need both. And I think, like you said, you know, you're talking hardware, but the framework of professional services and the services you provide, if you were to sit down and actually diagram it out on a back of a paper napkin, you would come up with some chunks and buckets and categories and tag them. You know, what we do is when you first think about services, it's like walking into a library where all the books are all over the floor. And what we do with those services is we create our own card catalog system. So miraculously, the books fly on the right shelves and you know where things are and you know how to go down the history aisle and what shelf something's on. That's what we do. We take this seemingly chaotic floor of books and we put them all on shelves. And we organize them in a way that we can easily find what we were doing with the client. We can take them along the path of how to navigate through our professional services themselves. And we give them options along the way of extreme handholding, i.e. advisory and consulting. Or it's good enough here that if you're a go-getter, a lister, go for it and do it yourself.
I think I'm going to have an offering called extreme handholding, by the way. And I will credit you with that. Let me know where to make out the check. But I'm learning a lot through listening. The library analogy, I've now got that one. And the extreme handholding, that'll be on my website next week.
Okay, very good. Well, it's all about, and the other thing in our industry, which all my audience knows, it's all about stealing what works and testing and measuring to see if it works for us. So we're all about swiping other people's stuff, trying it out, and making sure it works for us, because that is the way of the world when you're creating sales messages for people who don't know you, are not aware of you, and you're trying to put them over, cross them over the line and advance them to having this engagement with you. So tell me about the book and your interviews. What were the most striking things that you discovered as you interviewed people on your podcast?
Well, one of the major concepts to maintaining your status as a strategist, because, you know, I look at the, for a professional services company, if they don't recognize that they have a business of strategy and a business of implementation, and those two are separate things, it's a separate perception, it's separate relationships, it's a separate business model, they're separate competitive pressures, but people tend to bundle it together. So the first set of interviews is really helping people understand why the implementation side of any industry, why the doing of things will always be commoditized, especially in an age where training is globalized and anybody can put on an online training course, the doing of things is going to get easier. There's going to be more people in the marketplace that can do things, and thus the competitive pressure is always going to be on the rise. Now, when there are more people that can do the work, all of a sudden the processes and the systems to get the most out of those people become more valuable.
Right.
I've heard the Bureau of Labor Statistics call the gig network the industrial revolution of our time. And so selfishly, I interpret that as, okay, well, who was making the most money during the industrial revolution? It was not the line workers. They had a job.
Right.
But it was not the line workers that were getting rich. It was the people that said, maybe I'll make, I don't know, an assembly line, a system, a methodology to get the most out of this commoditized labor force. They made a few bucks.
Mm-hmm. They did. Just a few.
So yeah, that's number one, is just separating strategy from implementation in your mind. And then when you start to sell strategy, the most important thing you can do is understand how to maintain your status as an indispensable partner to your client.
Right.
And that's maintaining control. That's having a system. That's inviting leadership to co-create with you. Mm-hmm. So I suppose it breaks down into how to establish yourself as an indispensable partner, and then maintain your status as an indispensable partner. And
also give them those milestones along the way so that they understand where they are relative to goal. Because a lot of times we're going to be attracting people who are very much like us. And in my world, people want to know, where am I? Not necessarily relative to peers, although I have quite a big contingent of clients who want to know how they're doing based versus other folks. But that's because we're salespeople and that's kind of our nature. But it's also about, where am I relative to goal? Where am I on the success path? Am I beginning, middle, towards the end? Where are we? You know, and I think those are the milestones a framework can provide. Along with, here's along the way, along the success path, here's the quicksand that we're going to come up against. You know, no one could interpret what would happen with COVID. But because my clients were understanding the importance of different channels, most of them were able to quickly adapt away from the telephone and into another channel and still maintain the level of workload. Now, granted, I'm not in the travel or, you know, the industries that were heavily affected necessarily, but the phone just went dead in like overnight. Yeah. And for those clients that were very reliant on the telephone, we quickly had to pivot into another channel. Because they had the sales conversations already bucketized and ready to go, it was just a matter of changing the channel underneath it and leveraging digital channels versus analog channels in this particular case that we did. And I think that's the beauty of a framework, is that you're actually getting an understanding at a deep level how to maximize your return on effort. You and I have talked about this over and over again. And also to be able to multiply the result of your effort with as same amount of hours, 2x, 4x, 5x, 10x results. And because we had that flexibility, we were able to quickly switch, in this case, channels of distribution and still maintain the integrity and also maintain the volume that we were looking for results.
Yes to those. Well, if you want my version, I mean, you did nail part four of the book, the roadmap to residual income. There are three stages. One is to deliver it yourself.
Yeah.
As a consulting service. Two is to be able to facilitate that process with a group of people. Mm-hmm. And three is to be able to get someone to pay you to do it for their clients.
Right.
So you've got consulting, facilitation, and licensed income. You know, back to my story about licensing the IP that I had to other people. They went out, they sold it, they deliver it, and I make income off of that. That is the, you know, that's the final stage. But it, you know, back to what my dad taught me, you start with your personal life. What do you want your personal life to look like? That final stage isn't the final stage for everybody. It's not in their life plan. Mm-hmm. They might get everything they want because they love teaching people. They might stop at that facilitation stage and right. really embrace speaking gigs and you know, delivery one to many, but still doing it themselves. So it's, you know, like you said, I think if you have the system in place, you're then able to tailor it to what people really want out of life. And it's been fun.
I bet. And I'm really curious, the word agency, why the word agency to encapsulate what it is that you do?
You mean my ideal customers?
And why you have the book, you know, because the subtitle of the book is how to really package up your professional services. Why is this? Why do you frame that in something called an agency?
Well, I chose agency survival. It was really hard to choose, honestly, because my best clients identify as consultancies.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I had to make a decision, and I guess I defaulted to agency because they need the most help. And this book isn't an instructional guide to doing it. This book mm-hmm. is a collection of stories to really give people the motivation and the understanding of what's possible. And
okay, gotcha. But it's usually people who gravitate to you are people in agencies who deliver products and services to their clients,
exactly.
Like resellers and
that help their clients grow their businesses.
Right. But in reality, a solo practitioner, a lawyer, a financial services person could take the teachings from this book because they are their own agency, so to speak.
Right.
And apply it.
I would be a hypocrite if I just called it, you know, how to productize consulting services, because I am a big fan of focus, and I do teach that to all of my clients. So you're right. I have people come to me and say, hey, I read your book. And I have clients that are law firms, and I have a client that moves biotech companies. Like, I have clients that are totally unrelated, but right. that's what tends to happen when you focus, because you get so much traction in your focus area.
Yeah.
That you become more referable, and people almost feel like they've won something, like you've let them into a secret room when they're like, hey, I know you only work with agencies, but could I pay you 25% more? Maybe you could consider me. Well, maybe we'll figure that out. Yeah. Maybe we could do something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. You're narrowing that niche, but in reality, it does apply, and people can see through that, especially when you're offering these multiple what I call levers of, you know, facilitating workshops, information nights, one-on-one coaching. You mentioned speaking, and now that's kind of morphed into virtual speaking. Yeah. So, you know, but the frameworks themselves are always there that you can teach and reteach. And that's the beauty of it. I mean, I think it's, yeah. And then what I love about it is if you are working with a lot of students, in my case, I do, then you're getting feedback on delivering your service to a larger audience. One of the biggest things, downfalls of the work that I do, if you want to call it a downfall, is that I've only really had 3 to 5 clients a quarter, and that was all I ever worked with. So in the big scheme of the pie, I'm working with a very small sliver of selected clients, if you'd want to put it that way, where in reality, I would love to test my methodologies to the wide net, you know, yeah. the guppies, the minnows, the smaller, you know, but this is a way you can do that and take a very expensive offering and package it for this residual annuity while you're sleeping type of income and still serve the world. You know, yeah. That's the beauty of it.
I think a healthy balance is important. I mean, the client that pays you an arm and a leg that you're working with one-on-one, I mean, that is such a rich source of really in-depth information. Like you really experience it and can live it with them. And plus when they pay you an arm and a leg, it means they're really bought in. So they're, you know, they're your ideal customers. Then when you're delivering one to many, I mean, that's the experiment. You get a larger volume of information. You start to figure, oh, it's great for this group. It's bad for this group. And here are the mindset characteristics that we should be looking for. And it's all a part of the journey. I who knows what delivery format is going to be most attractive to you. And in your case, it does change over time. What you love when you're 30 might not be what you love when you're 50. A world crisis might change your view on things, an opportunity to move somewhere, live a life you never thought you would.
Yeah.
So you have to have the systems in place to be able to quickly deploy it in new ways.
Exactly.
And that's why I wrote the book. So people would do that.
Wonderful. So what's next for you? When's the book coming out, or is it out officially now?
We're in a stage of collecting reviews. As I've heard that those are important, before doing a formal launch of the book, but you could certainly get the book. It is on Amazon, Agency Survival Guide. And, I did make it available for free on my website. It came out during COVID. So I just figured, look, it's here. And if you like it, you could buy it.
Yeah.
But it does exist. And what was the other question? What's next?
What's next? How are you going to socialize it to the world?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, being a student of predictable prospecting and intentional pipelines, I have been able to generate conversation. I have a team of researchers. They know exactly who I'm looking for.
Right.
Like down to their previous career and how they were educated. Like I know that much about people's reactions to what I have to say. Mm-hmm. And so for example, agency owners with creative backgrounds, usually doesn't work out.
Not so much.
Agency owner with financial backgrounds, economic backgrounds, they're like, yeah, productize. That's perfect.
Operations background.
Yeah. Operations backgrounds. They're like, why haven't I done this? And you can't search for that. You need a human being. So I have a team of researchers that goes and finds these people. And over the years, I've been able to generate conversations with about 20%.
Nice.
So now my plan, I've got a box of books here. I've got my coasters, which function as business cards. And I've got the written word. I'm actually going to hand write people notes about why my researchers came across them, why I think that we should talk, what they have to contribute. And I'm going to send people books in the mail, and no stone will be left unturned. This is stage two of three. Stage three is showing up at their house and knocking on their door and saying, no, you don't understand. I paid someone to find you and we're going to talk.
Right.
I think it's really intentional. And that's always been my approach, especially after working with you. And so that's what's next with the book. You know, what we have found after COVID, what we were forced to do is create an offering that was faster, more essential. Mm-hmm. And what we found is that experiment really taught us how to accelerate the pipeline at any time.
Right.
So there were some valuable lessons that were learned, and our business model hasn't necessarily changed, but it has been improved in that we've got a new accelerant to the business, something new up our sleeves. And it taught us that, out of our whole methodology and everything that we've created, there are in fact one or two things that can generate 90% of the results. And that's really special to find.
Yes, but you're also a student of testing and measuring, putting quality into the pipeline to begin with. If some of the audience listen to you, you have researchers that know what they're doing. You're not just purchasing a list. You're going after the people at a deep and meaningful level. The ones
the list
that
doesn't exist.
Right.
For what I know I need, the list doesn't exist.
The ones that have a higher probability of closing. You know, the predictable revenue formula has not changed, and that's, you know, the highest probability of closing, which is yield, with the fastest amount of time that you can add value, get the sense of urgency, get them closed. So that's a cycle time, and then the deal size going through. And if you adhere to those parameters and put quality in, you are assured certain level of success. How you take it further and keep fine-tuning it is through testing and measurement. So you do everything that I originally talked to you about and continue to probably to advance that beyond where most people would ever consider. So I love that. I love that. That's great.
Yeah. Now I know where I got all this. Cause I was like, why is my brain wired? I read your book and met you. That's what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. But you can meet someone but then you have, it just, that experience may tweak other areas that you might've left a little lagging or dormant, or you hadn't considered, and you're more open to it because you've heard it and now you're ready to apply it. That's the difference between people who I think are further along that level of greatness, is that they take a piece of information, they use repetition to apply it frequently, and then they measure the performance of that, put their ego in their pocket. And, you know, they're not going to put a lot of stake into it, but they are going to try it to see if it works or it's not. You know, go, no go. Yes, no. We don't like maybe. We don't like hope. So
Then for the listener, let me be very clear. The most disturbing thing that I have found since meeting you and actually being aware of it and conscious of it is almost no one that I talk to has a physical list of the people that they want to work with.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay.
They don't have it. Like it doesn't show me a list of all the accounts you want.
Right.
If I could snap my fingers, you'd want to get accounts, right? So show me the list of people that you want.
Yeah.
And everyone looks around and they go, well, we have like personas. No. Where are their names?
Physical, tangible. I want to get my arms around accounts.
Right. Who can I call for you? Like, you know, I'm not going to do that, but you need, that's the most disturbing thing, because that's the first step to being intentional, is just knowing who you want.
It's disturbing, but it's just a beautiful thing to hear, because it's something we can all correct.
Yes. It's very easy to do. And you don't even have to. You just tell someone else in your organization,
right,
go get me a list of 20 people that we want to work with.
Yes.
That's it. Yeah. Send them. Just go. Yeah. See what happens. You'll definitely be in a better position than you are today.
Exactly. Don't be passive about it. I teach my students, be proactive. Give yourself permission to want to know your total serviceable market, who they are, whether they're existing clients or new clients, whether you're selling existing products or new products. Those are four different ways you can go with your list. So you really want to focus on that and have that, because quality in, quality out. Rule number one.
Indeed. What else do we talk about on this show, Mary Lou? Or are we out of time? I'm not sure.
I think we're out of time. But I wanted to once again promote and say thank you for attending the podcast and talking with me today. And the book is The Agency Survival Guide. What's the website, Max? So that we'll put it on your page, but what's the website that they can look and see and download a free chapter, I'm wondering? Or what do you have?
They can download the entire book on my website.
It's right next
to there's the buy button, and then there's the download free button. You make the choice.
Or donate button.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. Hopefully I have internet in a couple months. But the website is maxtrailer.com.
maxtraylor.com.
T-R-A-Y-L-O-R. I mean, you're probably looking at my name on the interview, but you know.
Yeah, and I'll put it on your page. We do a page with your beautiful face and get everything on there. So we
thank you.
Ready to go. And anything else you want to share with the folks before we say goodbye?
150 conversations, half turned into opportunities, and one quarter closed as sales. 17 new customers in 2019. That was my predictable pipeline.
All right. Good number. Love those waterfalls. You hear that, everybody? Waterfalls are important.
And by the way, I don't want that to change this year. I don't want any more. I just want that exact thing to happen again. And we're well on our way.
And you're happy about that. Very good. Well, thanks again for spending time with me. Take care of that beautiful family of yours. And we will talk to you later, Max. Take care.
Cheers.